following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
To It Came From The Radio. I am your co-host, Charlie Saladino. Herman Sinertia was out in Baldwin and got shot down by aliens. He incurred a flat tire, which Mark and Hassan went to his rescue. They should be here shortly. And if anybody, as always, is having trouble listening to us on the air, go to our worldwide website at www.am1240wgbb.com. And if anybody wants to call in, the number here is 631-888-8811. So, having said that, let's start with a little bit of news. And before I forget, as always, such an important part of the show, also in the studio with me is our program director, Tom Ross. Say hi, Tom.
Hi, how you doing? It's always a pleasure to be on this show. I get a kick out of it every week.
Excellent. We get a kick out of having you here. As you all know, Tom is our all-wise, all-knowing man behind the glass here, if anybody pays attention to the show. Tom knows everything.
Feel free to pay attention to the man behind the curtain.
yes. and if anybody watches or listens, watches, I'll be all right, listens to the show, you have heard Tom come up with amazing facts, and it's just a wonderful thing to have him here. Also, we do have a webcam, so I wasn't far off, so you can watch us, but it's in 10-second intervals, so we're like max headroom here.
Yeah, it's not really it's not a video camera. It's more like a slideshow camera.
Yeah, you're right. I've seen it. It's kind of weird. Tom has handed me a bit of news here from the New York Post. Weird and what is that called, Tom? Weird and what?
Weird and wacky or something.
Yeah,
like
something
that.
Something like that. But this needs to be said in this day and age of so much money that the government is wasting. Here's another one. Government got mad too. A regional agency in Florida is spending taxpayers' funds on red superhero capes to inspire the unemployed to get jobs. So far, its capability challenge has shelled out more than $14,000 on capes for job seekers. It also paid $2,300 for foam cutouts of cartoon characters. It's calling Dr. Evil's unemployment. So far, to me, that's $16,300. Gary Earle, who heads the agency and is probably getting a raise for thinking of this stupid idea, that's not in there, but I just put that in. He heads the agency of Central Florida's workforce, acknowledge not everyone will agree on the creative strategy. What creative strategy? You know, Tom.
Faster than a speeding unemployment check. More powerful than a determined repo crew.
Yeah.
Able to leap tall foreclosures in a single bound.
Yeah.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's capes for the unemployed looking for a new work?
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, could you imagine that? You know who they should give the capes to, Tom? The guys who have three or four jobs, just not trying to get on unemployment or welfare, just to keep their families afloat. That's the guys who need the ripped capes.
Absolutely, so, the real superheroes.
Yeah.
Well, anyone who manages to keep themselves and their family fed these days in a way is a hero in my book.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you have a lot of people out there busting, as I say from my own neighborhood, busting their chops.
Yeah.
And, you know, working and everything like that. So I have to tell you the story. I get a call from Herman,
mm-hmm.
and he says, quick. I have a flat tire, which in anybody's world wouldn't be a big thing, but in Herman's world, it was catastrophic because, as we all know, those lugs get stuck. So.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, the same thing happened to me not this past Monday, but Monday before. And I was on my way to an important appointment, too. All of a sudden, I got a flat tire. Dug out the spare, and I dug out the jack and the tire iron, and lo and behold, the blasted lug nuts were frozen solid. And I had to send for AAA, which I ordinarily wouldn't have, and sit around and miss the appointment, and all kinds of merriness and mayhem ensued.
Yeah, my brother-in-law Jerry has a good solution for that. I don't know if it works. I'm not telling anybody to do this. But after he takes the lugs off, he soaks them in WD-40 or some type of graphite oil so they stay on secure, but the next time it wouldn't be that hard to get them off.
If it works, I'll tip my hat to it.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, when they bring their cars in for new tires or rotations or whatever, they will insist that the bolts be tightened by hand only and not with the use of pneumatic equipment.
Right. Well, in Herman's case, I'm sure he'll be requesting that for the next time. But Tom also handed me some sad news today. Mark will come in with the news, but we'll go right to the sad news because I think this lady should be mentioned. Elizabeth Sladen, who played Sarah Jane Smith on the Doctor Who series down in the 1973 region, has passed. She had cancer. She was 63. She is the one I think we all grew up with, who's old enough to remember. She was the Doctor Who's sidekick that we all grew up with. I know I did.
Right.
And
She started out with how do you pronounce it, Petrie, but she's most famous for the work she did with Tom Baker.
Right.
And she's widely considered the first modern emancipated female to take on the role of the Doctor's companion or assistant.
Right. She played a journalist. An investigative journalist.
Right.
Yeah.
And eventually, they even spun her off on her own series. You have the article there. It says, towards the end of it, it says what the name of it was. It was Sarah Jane Investigates or something like that.
Yeah, Investigations. That was it. I'll find it. But anyway, she passed away. She had cancer. She was very young in my age bracket. She was very young, but 63.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
63 in this day and age is not old.
No, not at all.
Except to a 17-year-old person.
Yeah.
But, it's a sin because that's the person who I remember.
Right.
And then they even brought her back on the they resurrected her in the 205 series. She was brought back as the star of her own alien busting TV show. That's how she started. And,
yeah. The interesting thing is they say that the act the actress, she really wasn't all that interested in science fiction because she thought it was a little too technical and required too much headwork. She didn't even know what TARDIS stood for.
Right. And later on in an interview, she says, she says she only found out it stands for time and relative dimensions in space.
Mm-hmm.
And she says she only found that out. So, which I thought was pretty cute of her to, admit that, which it says all the science fiction fans will cringe, but she didn't even know what that means.
Yeah.
Which
didn't stop her from being a great science fiction hero in her own right, a great lady, a great actress, someone that was easy to get a crush on, is a boy. I hope my significant other in the future looks exactly like her in an act life.
Yeah, she was adorable, and for anybody, like I said, who grew up with me. In fact, that was the 1973 was the year after I graduated from high school. So I was watching a lot of science fiction back then, and even before that, as you know, me and Herman going to the casino and Leffitt's theater back in the old neighborhood in Ozone Park. But science fiction was a big part of my life back then, still is. So having said that, she was one of the, you know, I think she was one of the pioneers in.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, she's considered the first modern feminist emancipated companion of the Doctor. I gather before that, they were all, you know, just basically maidens in distress of one sort or another who, would usually acquiesce to whatever the closest male said.
Right.
But, you know, starting with Sarah Jane, they started getting really the companions started getting really their own personalities and so forth. I mean, she was not portrayed as a milquetoast in any way, shape, or form. And if I can, she was also probably the first companion of whom serious speculation started about whether she and her character and the Doctor were supposed to be sleeping together. One thing that was noted by a lot of people is that every time she walked out of the TARDIS, she was wearing a different outfit.
Yeah.
And she was followed. The companion who followed her was the semi-wild woman, Lita.
Right, right,
right.
Yes,
who took that even to a greater extreme.
Right, I remember her like Sheena of the Jungle.
Right, exactly.
Garb there, you know.
Yeah, a little bit of trivia. She had blue eyes, but the trouble is the character was. For some reason, I thought the character should have brown eyes. Yeah. So they had her wearing contact lenses. The trouble was, apparently some people's eyes just cannot take contact lenses.
Yeah.
And after a while, she just couldn't wear them anymore. So they had to gimmick up a supposed accident in one of the adventures where she got exposed to a bright light that for some reason was supposed to turn her irises from brown to blue.
Yeah, and then they played Crystal Gale, so doesn't make my brown eyes blue type deal.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Anyway, and in the later years, they noted that the phone booth had its own wardrobe center in it, mm-hmm. So that could have been the result of that. And now in the studio, joining me is...
Okay, hang on a moment. Hey, Mark, let me put the mic on. Hang on, here we go.
Oh, well, there you go. You can at least wait for me to get the headphones on. So, hello, everybody. We have Hassan Godwin also walking into the station. We all know. I don't know if we weren't able to listen to the show because my radio's acting up. So you mentioned that Hermes Nurture was on his way, but he had a flat tire and we had to go help
him. Right. Aliens shot it out. Yeah. Aliens shot it out.
So. Yeah, we've just been discussing the tragic passing of. You see? Okay.
Yeah. All right, so did we hit any other news, or that was the only one?
No, I was waiting for you. We just on this Doctor Who.
That's not subject. Cool.
Yeah.
She just had her own show, too. Well,
yeah,
for a while.
Yeah, it just wrapped up before your season.
Yeah, she will be missed. She was one of my favorites.
What did she die of?
Cancer. Oh,
cancer. She was 63. Did you mention that we have a special guest on tonight?
No, I was waiting for you to do that. I knew you'd be right along.
So the second bit of news is that we actually have the Spidey Project guy, the creator of the Spidey Project on the Broadway show, the official first ever Broadway play about Spider-Man is going to be on, I guess, in about 15 minutes. But that actually is a segue to a bit of news that
Hurry
I have.
Hurry up with the news.
Mr. Segue.
No segues. Hurry up with the news.
It is now official. As of April 17th, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark has closed down and will begin a revamped show starting May 12th.
Wow.
And are expected to have a June 14th premiere in New York.
It's like Apocalypse Now. It's like the year, you know, the stories behind the making of Apocalypse Now. It was just one horrible, calamitous event after another.
I'm shocked.
So, about Apocalypse Now or about Spider-Man? Either one.
So show creators Bono and the Edge of U2 will pen two new songs for the musical.
Yay.
And choreographers were also brought on board to rework the show's dance numbers.
Okay,
producers,
here, this, at this part, don't fall down. my work here is done.
That's it.
When you're up on the rafters, hold on.
Yeah.
No.
Spider-Man, hold on to the rafters.
Yeah, hold on to the ropes.
Producers were also set to act the role of the so-called geek chorus of comic book fans who narrated parts of the show, as well as the minister role of Arachne, one of Spider-Man's nemesis. So her part got reduced after she got, what, 2 or 3 concussions per actress.
Yeah.
So they got rid of that. So now it was it's gone. It's going to be back on May 12th. So now the Justin Moran, who did the Spider Project, as the only official opening and closing show before anything else happened. I think that's kind of cool. Alrighty.
Oh, wow.
I think it is. You know, that's
yeah.
It's one of those things. This past Tuesday was Judgment Day for Terminator fans. According to the series, it was the day that Skynet became self-aware. So if you guys were paying attention,
really,
Tuesday was Judgment Day. So now we gotta keep an eye out.
It was 1997 in Terminator 2.
Well, this is in the series. So the most recent incarnation, they said that it was 2011. So this is Judgment Day. So now we gotta watch out for the robot zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, your car's gonna refuse to run when we go back outside.
Just
the robot rebellion.
Go ahead. I got some news too, but go ahead.
Oh, alrighty. here's something else. For those of you who couldn't get enough of singers Tiffany and Debbie Gibson in the movie Mega Python versus Gatoroid,
couldn't get enough, Mark. Tell me.
All three of you
are in luck. It is just announced that the duo will be touring together this summer. So they're going to be performing their songs together across the country, United States.
Wow.
Could you imagine that stage artwork?
I can imagine them competing with the crickets from the audience. Yeah. That's going to be pretty difficult.
And now for my big 80s
crickets.
Yeah. Now for my big 80s hits.
Exactly.
That's so mean.
The kids out there, what's the 80s? I don't understand.
I don't think they're actually going to be the ones going to see it.
There are kids who are 20 in their 20s now who were not born even in the 80s.
They'll be in the audience.
You understand?
But they're not going to go see them, is what I'm saying.
They have missed the 80s completely, and they're in their 20s.
Yeah.
They're not going to.
And I could
just saying.
I could just see those young kids go, where's the shock? You know?
This song sounds just like, who are these three again? This song sounds
Pop
just like
Tarts on Parade.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. The 80s, not a good time for music. Sorry. You're not going to get anybody to say. There are people who love 80s music. It's nostalgic.
Right.
It reminds them of their upbringing. But there's musicians to say, yeah, that was
a good time.
That was a cornerstone of American music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. If you remember last week, we talked about Jerky McGee and his internet pretending to be somebody else to
Jerky
promote
McGee.
Himself.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yes,
Jerky McGurkin.
Well, along the same lines, last week Dilbert creator Scott Adams was revealed to have been using an online pseudonym to bash message boarders who did not have nice things to say about him. It seems an individual posting as Planned Chaos recently rushed to the defense of Scott Adams on a website where the users were calling his intelligence into question. suspicion came into light when some of the posts were being more examined closely, such as, quote, it is Adams' enormous success at self-promotion that makes you jealous and angry. And, quote, it is fair to say that you disagree with Adams, but you can't rule out the hypothesis that you're too dumb to understand what he's saying.
Oh, wait. And
that was the person in defense.
That was profound evidence that that could have just been a fan. That could have honestly just been a very
tacky, tacky, tacky.
No doubt it's tacky, but that still could have been, a rather overzealous fan. Those exist.
Well,
fans kill their idols all the time for being that kind of obsessed.
But yeah, so it turns out that they did some research, and it turned out that it was Scott Adams, and he then once he caught revealed himself. Yeah,
well,
it was
also
me.
Was tagged. You know, I am not Scott Adams at the bottom of his his post.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I'm not Scott Adams.
No, and if you figure out that this is Scott Adams, it's not. That's what the disclaimer was.
Exactly.
It's not. I don't care how much those letters go.
Yeah.
It's not.
I don't care how much you track back the
signal
here.
If anybody have a brain, they would figure out it's not Scott Adams. Right. Yeah.
Once caught, he went on to say, quote, according to the wise and fair denizens of the internet, this behavior is proof that I am a thin-skinned troll, egomaniac, misogynist.
Over there, you could read that as a news. I just did it. Guy spending, I don't know how many, $14,000 on capes for the unemployed. Red capes for the unemployed. Yeah. It's yeah. Funny. Tom handed me that. I was hysterical. Hassan, just read that because I read read it.
Hassan can read it, but what other bit of news you said? You had another piece of news?
I had another little piece of news that Tom might know about. Does anybody know, yesterday was April 19th. Does anybody know what happened 5 o'clock in the morning, April 19th, about 245 years ago, so on, approximately?
I wasn't around then.
No, me neither, but I read about it.
Oh, no. What happened?
That was the most pivotal day in American history.
Oh, I think Tom
got it. Tom, go ahead. You know it.
Yeah, that was the Battle of Lexington and Concord. Right.
Right, the shot that was heard around the world. Right.
Believe it or not, one of my ancestors was there.
Oh, there you go.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
His name was Dr. Tom.
No. As a matter of fact, if I'm remembering correctly, he was a Harrington.
Yeah. There you go. So.
Yeah, and the reason he was there was he and his other family members were teetotalers. They didn't drink. And then earlier in the night, there had been a false alarm, and everyone had come out. And when no redcoat showed up, they all went to the tavern and got so drunk they couldn't appear when the real one showed up.
Yeah, so they only have about 14 or 15, 16 revolutionary soldiers.
Right. Yeah. And, of course, the day before was the famous ride of Paul Revere.
Yeah, that was the midnight ride. And he took his midnight ride saying, the British are coming. Get the militia ready.
Yeah, although the truth of the matter is he was actually captured fairly early on, and two of his companions, one of whom was Dr. Compton, actually completed it.
Right. Well, that's what he gets for yelling out and drawing attention to himself.
Well, he actually wore a mask and riding on a horse that made a lot of noise. I think the horse gave him away.
Yeah. See, if he would have been creeping,
I blame
that's
the
what
horse.
Happens when you put cowbells on your horse.
Yeah. He would have been creeping around. It would have been fine. But yeah. See, that's what he gave.
When you were creeping around, you wouldn't have warned anybody. No one would have known.
Yeah. That's a double-edged sword.
He would have
right
woke
there.
Up and the British would have been
and
in their front
yard.
And
somebody said to him, you need more cowbell.
Yeah, the weird thing of this is nobody knows what the name of the horse was, and you know the name of just about every famous person's mount in history, but no one knows what the name of Paul Revere's horse
he
was.
He stole the horse.
Dead man's horse.
Yeah, they call it Paul's horse.
Yeah.
This is Paul's horse.
Hey, Paul, here's your horse. Ride like the wind.
I will call this horse Morse.
Yes.
And I shall ride and warn everyone.
Later on, it would become a character on Bonanza. So yeah.
And then there would be glue for my cabin.
So we're ready for our break. We'll be right back for Gangs on Radio.
Quick break.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
Thank you.
tonight's musical selections are done in the memory of the late, great Liz Ladd, and she will be missed.
Thank you, Tom, for that. That was very nicely done. So we are back with the Came From the Radio. It's your host, Mark Torres, speaking finally from our little excursion, along with Hassan Godwin and Charlie Saladin.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi.
And on the phone, I am proud to say we have a very special guest. I'm going to call him the $65 million man. He did something that $65 million could not do. So say hi, Justin.
Hello.
And why don't you introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself, tell us what's going on.
Oh, sure. My name is Justin Moran. I am the creator and director and co-author of the Spidey Project, which created the first and only Spider-Man musical to officially open in New York in 30 days on a budget of $0 when the Broadway behemoth couldn't do that with $65 million in 6 years.
So $65 million. Have you ever thought about what you could do with that if you had that much? Because I saw the show. I know Charlie saw it on the website, and it was phenomenal. I mean, could you imagine what you could do with $65 million?
Oh, man. I think about it. Honestly, after a point, I don't even know. I think with $5 million, I could make something epic and then take a $60 million vacation.
I don't know. No matter how much money you had, it wouldn't have been as good as the show you had on there. It was phenomenal.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah.
So what was the idea behind it? Why did you decide to do this?
Well, I guess it started around like February 8th when the Broadway show was supposed to open around then. And because it had been pushed back so many times, like all the theater critics from the big publications in New York decided that they were going to just go on that day to previews and review it like it was supposed to open. And the reviews were just across the board, just terrible, just pans of everything. And I was reading them, and I had written this show the year before, and I was like, you know, I don't need any budget near that to make a show work, and especially with Spider-Man, when you've got such like a well-loved story that like everybody knows and wants to get behind, but all the hard work is done for you. All you have to do is just like care about what you're doing and tell it well. And so I was talking to a friend about it. And I was like, I should just try it. Then I went home and I like at 3 o'clock in the morning put this video on Facebook and on YouTube and went to bed, and then by the following morning I was fully committed to what I said I was going to do.
So there was no production money at all into this. So how did you get the volunteers? How did you get the cast? How did you get everything put together?
Well, I made this like 90-second video that I put on Facebook and on YouTube, and I was like, you know, if you believe that good theater doesn't have to take $65 million, this is what I'm trying to do for $0, and the next 31 days I want to create it from scratch. If you can't help forward this video on, and if you can't help, let me know. And it's just like my friends started forwarding it on, and their friends started forwarding it on, and then people that I didn't know, and theater companies I didn't know, just like people just kept spreading the video, and then people would like email me, like, I volunteer, and I got like, you know, I just like composers and choreographers, and set designers, and costume designers, and actors, and like all these people that were like, yes, we, you know, like, we love good storytelling, that's why we got into theater, we're totally on board. And then like 2 days later, I had, you know, so many people to choose from, I was like, out of hand. And I was like, all right, it was great. So I released another video, and just basically I kept this production diary going as people were like volunteering different things, and I just came out of the woodwork to make a statement.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? So where do you come from? Do you have a comic background? Do you have a interest in theater? How did you start out at?
Well, I guess I definitely have an interest in theater. I love musical theater. I write musicals. Like, I wrote a musical last year called Pope, an epic musical, which played at the Lucille Lortel in New York and won me an award in the Fringe Festival. I guess primarily I'm a comedian. I do like improv comedy. I actually just 15 minutes ago got out of a show. I'm sitting backstage at a theater on 29th Street right now called The Magnet, where I perform regularly. So I guess I'm primarily a comedian, but I love musical theater.
So did you think that helped at all putting this project together, or was it something else that you felt, just the love of the Broadway?
You know, I definitely think that it helps, because like, I feel like improv has this mentality of like, you don't need any money or like costumes or set. It's like most of our shows are just like 8 people in 2 chairs, and that's like that's all we need to deliver a funny show. So it's like, so for like coming at musical theater with no budget, with that kind of mindset, made it more freeing, I guess, you know?
So what was the decision to only have it for a one-day show? Why did not having for longer?
Well, I thought we were going to get sued. one of the things I said in the video was, like, let's just do this Spider-Man origin story. Like, and I always knew that it would be, like a funny parody show. But, I wanted to do the story justice and the characters justice. And my co-author, John, was, like, very big in the comic books as well. And we both wanted to do this thing. And then we were like, well, can we legally do this? And we were like, yeah, we're not sure. And then we figured, let's keep it free. Let's only do it one night, and we'll put it on YouTube. And as long as we get our one night, we'll be happy. And then even, like, after the show was over, the theater was like, you can run as long as you want. And other theaters were like, you can come do your show at our theater. And we were just like, we don't want to burn any bridge. We definitely don't want to upset, like, Marvel or Disney or anyone like that. We just wanted to make our point and prove that it can be done. And, not cause any huge fights.
So going to jail was not part of the plan.
Definitely not.
Oh, man. All I could tell you, Justin, is this thing was genius. I was hysterical. There was parts I was rolling with this, and
you.
I was so aggravated. I wasn't in that theater. So along that lines of, I don't want to get sued, you're not going to put a DVD out of this, are you?
Well, probably not. The YouTube clips are up. The thing is, to do a DVD, we'd have to get together again and film it, just because, like, the audio quality of YouTube isn't good enough to release. But we've got a cast album that we actually had a recording studio donate, like, all the recording space and equipment. So we've been in the studio just cutting an album that we're going to try to put on our website in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, my God. Let me know when that is, because half of the stuff I couldn't hear because of the quality of the YouTube, but the stuff I caught, I was hysterical. It was pure genius.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I can't definitively say, but if you're going to be at Comic-Con, we may be around.
Oh, yeah. We're always there.
Well, we'll go to the New York one.
The
New York Comic Con.
Not San Diego.
That's the one I mean.
Oh, that's the one you mean, New York one?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, we are going to be there.
We'll be there.
Well, Broadway. I don't know if he's going to go crazy and fly all the way to San Diego to promote something in Broadway.
I have a question.
Yeah, what's up?
How brave are you?
How what?
How brave are you? Because I'm about to ask you a serious question.
Oh, God, lay it on me. I'll say I'm pretty brave.
What is your opinion of Turn Off the Dark?
Well, in complete honesty, I've never seen it.
Okay.
So
that's the safe answer.
And that kind of answers everything. Well, you did your own Spider-Man show and didn't even bother to see theirs. So that explains it all, actually.
That explains why it's genius.
Why do you think it is since you're able to get your production done? And in 30 days, why do you think it is that's
$65 million
stymieing the works with this supposed grandiose big budget production that they're trying to do?
Well, sorry, I'll repeat that question one more time.
Why do you think it is that's really ruining their abilities to get this this play done?
People falling on people.
Yeah, exactly. But, I think a lot of it stems from, like, I don't want to say like hubris, but they're trying to do, like, so much that's, like, just so far and beyond. Like, people who go to theater are like, I'm ready to suspend my disbelief. People are going to be breaking into song. It's going to be a great night out.
Yeah.
And I feel like when you try to do, like, a little bit, like, make them fly, it gets to a point where, like, people start to worry about, like, okay, are they going to fly safely? Are they going to fall? And then, like, it takes them out of the show.
Right.
And there were videos that Julie released on YouTube during the production diaries for the show that are, like, where she's just talking about all these things that she wants to add to the source material to make it, like, bigger and bigger and make it, like, this huge, epic, like, Herculean myth that it's not. And I feel like if you just tone it back to what the Spider-Man origin story is and just do the source material, then, like, all the necessity to do those big, like, acrobatics and circus stuff is just, like, so minimal and so not necessary. And I feel like just, like, losing sight of the fact that she's doing Spider-Man and not her own epic was what kind of caused a lot of the hiccups.
Well, it's a chicken and egg thing. So what do you think it is? Do you think it's the audiences that are demanding more? Or do you think it's the producers who think that they're going to lose their audience if they don't give them a Hollywood CGI extravaganza, you know, in 3D on Broadway? Yeah, exactly. Do you think that Broadway is becoming kind of like Hollywood, where it's not going to be about the show anymore, about the actual production?
Yeah, I think a lot of Broadway is becoming a lot like Hollywood, and more than it just being like artistic shows, it's being like, you know, it's spectacles. It's what can we do to lure tourists in? And the funny thing about it is, like, you know, the show box office-wise is doing really well, and not just people, like, want to see an awesome show. It's because people are like, oh, I hear this is a train wreck. Let's get tickets. I forget which publication, but one of the newspapers even did an article like fixing the problems would probably be worse for business than having a good show, because now that's what people want to see. But yeah, it's a Hollywood mentality of we can do more, so we should do more, and it loses sight of why people like theater in the first place, you know?
Yeah, springtime for Spider-Man in New York City.
Yeah. One of the things that I was worried about when I was going to watch the Spidey project was, how is Spider-Man going to be Spider-Man? How is he going to swing from rooftop to rooftop with no budget, no special effects? And you addressed that beautifully.
Thank you.
Should I mention how it's done?
Yeah, go ahead. It's on YouTube if people want to see it.
We had two actors holding up drawings of a city moving back and forth while the main actor, Spider-Man in the middle, was just doing the arm swings. And that was just pure genius on how you got that to be done. I mean, I can only imagine what could be done with, well, you said $5
million? $5 million.
And you know what was great about
– $60
million. Yeah, you know what was great about that, Justin? And you had to get a great feeling when the audience responded to it. The audience just was like, oh, my God. So it didn't matter if you had people falling off cables or anything. The audience loved it. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, not to steal his thunder. When I was a kid, I went with my dad to see one of the productions of Batman and Robin, mm-hmm. like live action Batman and Robin. When they got into the Batmobile, it was two folding chairs and a bunch of lights just passing. Like someone spun a disco ball, and it was supposed to be them driving through the city. And I was a kid, and I believed it.
Yeah,
I didn't. And actually, the second production after that one, because I'd seen two, the second one. Batman said, okay, go get the Batmobile, and Robin forgot where he parked it. And that's how they explained it not being in the play. And it works. Kids were just happy to see Batman and Robin.
Yeah. Exactly. No,
like, you know, people, you don't have to go nuts with the, you know, if they had actually driven a Batmobile on stage, you know, that would have been still cool, but it wouldn't
have been necessary. As soon as you give a little bit, people are like, well, how does, like, you know, like, they expect more, and they want to, like, know about it. Like, I feel like, especially, like, a theatrical audience is like, you see the car drive on stage, the first thing I think is, like, where do they park that? Was that backstage the whole time?
So were these things problems that you were working on in your mind, how we're going to get stuff done while you were creating this thing, or you already had it all figured out, like, this is how it's going to work as you were moving along?
Well, to be honest with you, as far as like the inner city flying, like the web swinging scenes, I didn't really think about them all. Like, I didn't even think about them too much. And then we were in the rehearsal blocking that song, and I was like, we've got to have, you know, web swinging through the city. And I was like, oh, and I almost instantly the idea of just two of the actresses holding the building. This was like, oh, this is how we're going to do it. And then I thought about maybe using a rope, and then I was like, no, we probably couldn't rig a rope in the theater. Let's just keep it keep it simple.
Look what it did to the original play using ropes.
Yeah, ropes are bad. Ropes and plays are bad.
Yeah.
It's just a new rule.
And another Spider-Man bites the dust, and another one falls, and another one falls, and another one bites the dust.
Yeah, the last thing we wanted was, like, it's the kind of thing where, like, if we were in that situation and something did go wrong, it would have been terrible.
Yeah.
It would have defeated the purpose.
We'd be talking to you for a totally different reason right now.
So you finally killed the first Spider-Man on Broadway. Well, nicely done.
And you did that for no money, Justin. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. They're calling him for $65 million. You killed him for nothing. That's awesome.
That's great.
Oh, man.
So you mentioned the musical and the cast out recording. You wrote all the songs, the original music?
I wrote the, me and my friend John wrote the lyrics to it, and this guy Adam Pod and Doug Canceres wrote all the music to the song. It is all original songs. Adam, it was the first show that he had never written a musical before, and Doug is just this, like, ridiculous, great composer who's done his bad work on Broadway. He wrote all the music for the animated TV show The Tick. He wrote the By Menon theme. It's just crazy. So it's like working with the two of them was awesome, was great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm dumbfounded by that.
So how are you dealing with, I mean, obviously this is taking off, because I remember on the website you mentioned you only had planned for one show, and you actually had it so popular it was for two shows that night, correct?
Yeah, we had to add a second show at 10 o'clock.
So how what is your reaction to, you know, the feedback that you're getting of all this?
You know, at first it was like, it's funny, because at first I figured it would be like one night I'd maybe get like a 40-seat room to do it in, and just my friends would want to come. And then, like 2 days later, just by the sheer amount of emails I got, I was like, "Oh no, this is going out of hand."
It's gone viral.
Yeah. I was like, "Oh man!" And it's like, it's funny how quickly something like that turned to like, I don't want to let people down. Like, I've never had so many people looking at something I was doing like that before. So it became like, "Oh, how can I do more?" And the fact that the Pit like gave us the second show and like let us like, you know, use their lobby and cancel their other shows for the night was great. I would have loved to run it longer if I could have. I just
was afraid of getting sued.
Yeah, it was just
well, if you ever want to go underground, I will definitely come to that play three times over. We'll bring everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, put them in the black suit. And just call it
Spider Guy.
Yeah, call it the Scarlet Spider.
Or quoting one of your lines, call it Spiderman.
Well, if we ever do anything, any Underground Rogue productions, I'll definitely email you.
Oh yeah, please. I'm watching this on YouTube, and I'm saying I so wanted to be in that audience. Damn it. Yeah.
It was definitely an electrifying night to be there.
Yeah. So it must have been a gratifying experience when you came out for that curtain call. I mean, was the recording the first performance or the second performance that's on YouTube?
The first one is on YouTube.
All right. So when you came out, when you played your part and the audience went crazy, how was that feeling?
Oh, it was surreal. It was nuts. It's like I feel like as a director, I'm like, I never like worry, but as a writer, I always like, I'm waiting backstage during the opening scene being like, are they going to laugh? And I'm laughing. Why is no one laughing? And then when I walk, and like, cause normally like I hate doing cameos and things I write, but when I walk on stage and everyone started cheering, I was like, oh, I haven't even talked yet. Oh no. But it was tremendous. It was so great. It was like, overwhelming positivity.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things stand out in my mind, and just as I'm watching it, I'm going, this is amazing. The musical number Chipotle. Oh, my God. When they're holding up the paper bags, I'm saying, this guy is a freaking genius. He's a genius. And then the other thing that stands out in my mind, besides the whole play, is the secretary.
Isn't she great?
Oh my God! Yeah,
Betty Bryant.
She was a gem. She was a great find. I had originally cast another actress in the role who had to pull out at the last minute, and Claire, the girl that did play Betty, was like just like at the like literally like the night before the first rehearsal, just locked her in place just because she came very highly recommended, but I had never seen her do anything before, and so the first time I saw her, I was like, oh my God, I just lucked out. She was so great.
She was brilliant.
So, have you gotten any feedback at all from Marvel or Disney in any way, shape, or form?
Troublemaker.
Yes. Marvel, we actually had one of the original editors of Spider-Man in the 8 o'clock audience who emailed me afterwards and was like, I loved it. You nailed the heart of the characters and kept it true to the story. It was wonderful. He's like, it was Spider-Man in a way to turn off the dark. It would never be. Wow. And Disney came to see it, and they, I didn't get to talk to them in detail, but they said, had a very good time, and please keep us apprised of your future work.
Yeah. So. Yeah, because you know what? They all want a piece of the pie.
Please give us your address.
Because they know this will be a mega hit.
They're going to send Mickey Mouse to the house.
They're not going to sue you. They're going to just partner you. That's all. There'll be no suing involved. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you are part of Disney.
Yes. You're part of the cast, Justin. You're a cast member
Resistance
now.
Resistance is futile.
Yes.
We're going to have one of coming out.
One of us.
Yeah. Yeah, is that
one
you're
of part us. Of the Stephens Company.
One of us. One of
us. So you proved your point. You did something that $65 million could not do. What are you going to do next?
Well, we've got. I'm running another show with Adam, one of the composers of Spidey, that we're trying to get up for, like, the end of the summer in the workshops. And it's funny, like, before I wrote Spidey, I never had interest of doing, like, other people's, like, franchises or parody musicals. But now that I've done it once, I kind of want to do a Star Trek musical.
Oh, boy.
So we'll see what happens.
That's a whole nother world. You gotta be careful with those Trekkies.
Fans,
oh my God!
The Klingons are gonna be lining up.
Tread lightly with the Trekkies. I think you should do it. I don't want to discourage you. I think you should do it if you think you can do it. But
I personally think you should do the one forbidden thing that no one has done: Star Wars meets Star Trek.
Oh.
And I knew Hassan was gonna go crazy. But if you could accomplish that. Genius!
Yeah.
Oh,
I'll sign
man.
Off on that.
Yeah. Yeah, if I could do that. I hear George Lucas loves to squash small productions of anything Star Wars.
But what I think...
But that'll put you on the map. You get squashed by George Lucas. That's a way to get squashed.
First Mickey, now George Lucas.
Yeah, that's the right way to get... You know, you'll be partnered to death by Disney, and then Lucas's foot will be too small. He won't be able to stop you. Don't worry about it.
What I think you should do, Justin, just personally, I think you should send out all secret invitations to one more show of the Spidey Project, and just for people, you know, to bring people.
Yeah, a plus one.
Yeah.
Because I want to see the play, that's why.
I want to see it live in person.
I want to see it live. Oh, my God, I love that so much.
I can tell you this much. That's been suggested, and it's not entirely out of the question.
Oh.
There you go.
Okay, so remember.
Flash mob play.
I can't say anything more than that.
Remember us. I will bring people.
not those kind of people.
Yeah, the right kind of people.
Yes, yes, the right kind of people.
Oh, oh, man. My God. since you made this play, and
I made this,
you've gotten great feedback. I mean, you've had many reports from New York Times. Was it one of the guys that reviewed the play? I know you had you listed a couple of places. What was one of the places that reviewed your performance on the website you had?
Broadway World reviewed it. Publishers Weekly reviewed it. I know, a bunch of my iPad doesn't have internet, so I'm not entirely sure. The New York Times did an article on us beforehand, and so did the Wall Street Journal. Broadway World and Publishers Weekly come to mind, but I'm not entirely sure who else. We had, like, I guess probably about 10 or so reviews come out afterwards.
And out of each one, there was nothing negative about it, was there?
No, everyone was so positive about the whole thing.
So how swelled is your head right now?
I'm drunk with power.
As well you should be, sir.
Do you wake up every morning and go, I was a genius?
Oh, man.
Right now I'm drinking soda from the skull of one of my enemies.
So what, tomorrow you're going to go down and talk to Bono, right, and tell him, well, this is what you should do. Is that the nice plan? Yeah.
He'd probably kick me in the throat.
But then you got kicked in the throat by Bono.
Kicked in the throat by Bono.
Yeah.
Partnered to death by
Disney and stepped on by George Lucas, man.
This,
you were in the high life.
This only adds to the success, Justin. Damn it.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, definitely, we are big fans here at the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you very much. It definitely has me excited for whatever's coming next, you know?
And so have you thought, just teetering around in the swelled head of yours, mm-hmm. what would you do to change what's out there for other big, gigantic Broadway plays? And you sit around thinking, well, you know, if they only did this or they only did that, and you're getting some little credence now, so you might send a little email, hey, you know, this is what I think.
Well, you know, if I I think if I had my say, like, and the Spoopy Project was able to accomplish something far bigger than it possibly could, I would say it would be like, I would love to see, instead of like $165 or $70 million show, I'd love to see like 12 or 20 small shows that, instead of having like huge budgets, just had really good writers and really good actors, so that the Tony season was awesome and everyone was interested, and that they had to like out-creative each other to solve the creative problems. And it was all about style and design and content, and not spectacle and marketing and cross-marketing. You know, that would be my like, and that way, like, I think this past year, like, you know, Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson and Next to Normal and Scottsboro Boys, like, all these original shows closed down and all these actors are out of work. But it would be great to just re-employ the actors for good, smaller shows, because, you know, the actors and the story are more important than the wiring and the smoke machines.
And that's been a theme.
Perfect.
That we've been
since
we've been on for like a year and change for this
like
past year.
Yeah. Story and actors and then.
So we have less than a minute to go. Justin, do you want to promote anything else? Now's your time. Less than a minute.
Oh, less than a minute. I would say check the blog site. In the next 2 weeks, we're going to have a cast album up for free download, and a couple of great new videos coming out.
Right, thank you once again, Justin. We really appreciate you doing this for us, and we will support you. It was a really good show, and I encourage all our listeners to go on to www.thespideyproject.com and watch it.
blogspot.com.
I'm sorry. Go on there. Thanks again, Justin.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good night, guys.
Thank you, just you.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From The Radio. If you missed any part of the show, like we did,
flat tire
you can go online to www.itcamefromtheradio.com, and you can listen to the archives, which will be up in about a week. If you can't wait that long, you can always go on to the Twitter page, and you can go to the iPod place, wherever that is, on the intertubes, such as Podcast Planet. It's a podcast.
Yeah,
and
right,
don't
right.
forget to join us on our Facebook and Twitter page, and all the news items, which we did a couple of them, will be on the Facebook page. And that's about it. So we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From The Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.